up at the corner of Trinity and 41. Too high to even know.
Hey everyone, it's Rob with Four Songs coming at you with another episode. Got a four song singles for you this time. I'm getting into a bit more of a routine, but I can't guarantee it's going to last too much longer. So thing to do is just hit that subscribe button or follow me on Twitter at foursongs2. Follow me on Instagram, foursongs, and that way you don't miss anything, because I can't guarantee you I'm going to be very regular in the next couple months, but you're not going to want to miss it. I can guarantee you that. So if there's ever an artist that just fit the bill for this podcast to a T, it is my next guest, Tim Easton. Tim is a Nashville-based singer-songwriter. He is a troubadour's troubadour. If you've been listening to this podcast from the beginning, you know I have a big thing for The Clash, and I have a big thing for bands like Uncle Tupelo and Wilco and Sunvolt and all those alt-country bands, because when those bands were just getting started, or when Sunvolt and Wilco and Whiskey Town and the old 97s and Nico Case and so many others were just getting started, that was when I was kind of getting started too. I was a bit of a music critic back in the late 90s for an online magazine. And I just dove in headfirst into that alt country mindset, that genre. You know, I thought it was going to be the next big thing. A lot of other people did too. In fact, you'll remember back in the late 90s when bands were getting on major labels, Honey Dogs had a major label deal. Of course, Lucinda Williams, but she didn't need it. She remains an amazing singer-songwriter. But just think back. I mean, bands were getting a lot of money. And then it all pretty much cratered because Napster came around and the industry has never been the same since. So anyway, you know, Tim's first solo album came out right before Napster kind of ruined everything. So this is the late 90s. Tim has been a constant presence in the what we now call Americana field. He will call himself a folk singer, but I think there's a bit more going on in his music than just him and a guitar. We get to talk about his new album called Find Your Way and the first single from that album, which is also called Find Your Way. Now, you know, there's a point where I call it his new single. It's actually not the new single. It's the first single. So don't get too caught up on all that stuff. But what I want you to really hone in on is there's a point where Tim is talking about how much he loved The Clash as much as he loved Johnny Cash, the Loving Brothers as much as he loved Elvis Costello, the heroes of our heroes, he will tell you. You know, it took me back to my early 20s, my senior year of college, when I really jumped into this alt-country thing, because I saw the line from The Clash to Wilco, the line from the Sex Pistols to the Honey Dogs, what have you, Johnny Cash, it's all there. I have not listened to that music in a long time, so it was fun to kind of go back and listen to some of Tim's earlier work and then pick up some albums from that time frame in the late 90s that, you know, they're pretty good. And Tim has kept going. You know, he's stayed relevant. He's put out album after album after album. They keep getting better and better and better. And it was just a lot of fun to talk to him about his career and Find Your Way, which is a brilliant song about a cautionary tale, about a life-changing mistake that almost kind of ruined everything for him. But I'll let him tell you that story, not me, because that's why you're here. So everyone go check him out, timeaston.com. This is a great interview. I'm very happy, very pleased to welcome Tim Easton to Four Songs.
Well, Tim, thank you for joining me this afternoon for Four Songs. It's an honor to have you on the show. I've been a fan of yours, as I said, from the beginning now. So it's great to see you, and thanks for joining with me.
Appreciate it, Rob. Thanks a lot, man.
We're here to talk about your latest single called Find Your Way. And, you know, I started this podcast almost 4 years ago, which is still mind-boggling to me, when the pandemic was at its height, and somewhat had inadvertently kind of chronicled that, and then the return to normalcy, rather, if that's such a thing these days. So, right. Have you been the last few years?
Interesting. I've been in this spot quite a bit, you know, on this couch, looking out that window towards my magnolia tree. You know, the pandemic. I really lucked out in the pandemic. As the pandemic hit, that very week I closed on my house.
Oh, wow.
I bought a house right here in a quiet kind of suburb of Nashville, Madison. It's a pretty basic suburb, nothing fancy. And there was a tornado that week too. So trauma, yeah, the tornado skipped my house, but it did just, you know, it really laid havoc on parts of Nashville, East Nashville, where I was living before. You know, so it was some trauma right at the beginning of it. And then I just kind of settled in this routine of being able to hang out with my daughter a lot, which is really enjoyable. And, you know, today I'm my usual workaholic self. You know, I've got a ton of tour dates on the books and a new album coming out.
Yeah. So are things kind of back to normal?
I don't think so. I don't think there was ever a normal with me to begin with, honestly, you know, like troubadour types. Mm-hmm. Like what's the normal is, you know, other people's abnormal. I feel content. I feel happy, but like normal, that's a strange one for me to really, because you know, you're on the road playing folk gigs and stuff and there's nothing normal about it. But yeah. I guess for that, yes. In that way, yeah, most of us are touring again and you know, we all still get sick every now and then and there's a lot of cautionary stuff going on, but I'm trying to just bring music and uplift people because it's a heavy world out there. Let's face it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've been at it for 20 plus years and one of my favorite songwriters. So we'll hear her talk about, as I said, Find Your Way. And that's been out. The single has been out for a couple of weeks and the album comes out in the summer. Is that right?
Yeah. The album comes out May 17th, but the first song, which is also the title track, mm-hmm. this album, that's I just got the vinyl. Can you believe back in the day, the vinyl, I know that's backwards.
I see it. Yeah.
The vinyl would like come, you know, either after the album came out or whatever, but the vinyl's already here. So thank you, Chris Payne of Black Mesa Records in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The vinyl's already here. You can pre-order it at Black Mesa.
Oh, before we get to the song, it's interesting. The vinyl just makes me think of just the industry, how much it's changed.
Yeah.
Without your career. I mean, I was right out of college when Special 20 came out and in the late 90s. And as I would say, a very, very, very different world. Back then, as it is now, and went ways too many to count. And I mean, that was back when what we call Americana or alt country was going to be the next big thing. And that must feel like a lifetime ago for you, just considering
everything. I never felt like it was going to be the next big thing. Me, I mean, it was just like I was in a band in Columbus, Ohio called the Haynes Boys, and we were one of if not the only band, well, there was other bands that loved The Clash and Johnny Cash with equal fervor. You know, like we loved Hank Williams. Mm-hmm. We also loved Lucinda Williams. We loved modern music-ish at the time, you know, Elvis Costello, but we also, you know, we loved the Pogues and the album he produced for them. And we loved roots music. We loved old country music, but we also loved, you know, AC/DC or rock and roll for any better, you know, we loved whatever the MC, you know, we loved rock and roll and the Velvet Underground. We loved records. We loved that culture, that American history. And we were into the roots of it. And yeah, I was really lucky. I'll just say that I had older brothers. So the minute, you know, let's say it's the late 70s or the 80s and Prince and Cyndi Lauper's on the charts. You know, I had brothers that were also like, oh, you should listen to this Doc Watson. You should listen to this guy if you want to play guitar. Like, listen to the way this guy plays guitar. And at the time, I didn't go like, oh, that's, you know, I don't like that hillbilly stuff. I, like, got right into it. I don't know what it was that I was open to it at that time. And I'm not saying I was ahead of my time at all in that regards, but in Columbus, Ohio, mm-hmm. in the late 80s, there were no other bands that were playing Leuven Brothers songs and then Waiting for the End of the World by Elvis Costello or something. Yeah. Like our covers were obscure and, you know, yeah. And then No Depression magazine came out. I was in the, I don't know, second or third issue of it. Or I can't remember actually. I was early on with it before they changed it. And yeah, I mean, nobody was listening to Leuven Brothers except me and my buddies and then old guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying we were special. It's just that we liked old records and we kept on digging. We kept on studying the heroes of our heroes.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes to our detriment. But, you know, I think the great American songwriter Jeff Tweedy explained that all quite well in his books that he's written about how, you know, you just kind of listen to records and you like what you like.
You've kind of gone through some of your biggest influences, but when did you realize that you were a songwriter and that you were good enough at it that you could make a living? And
pretty distinct moment. I got some good marks in poetry in this eighth grade, maybe the sixth grade. My daughter's in the eighth grade right now. And she's listening to The Clash big time.
Oh, awesome.
I I got good marks in poetry. My brother, who played guitar and taught me blues stuff, you know, country blues, he said, you know, if you write poetry and play guitar, you can write songs. And that was it. I started right then. I copied I had the Beatles songbook, you know, and I was like, oh, a D minor goes with a D major, goes with a B, or like a B minor goes with a D major. I forget what it was, like, Drive My Car, I think, of all songs. The chord, I was like, you know, those chords were foreign to me at that time. I was like, oh, I'll just rearrange the chords and write my own lyrics to it. And I did. I had a long talk about this at Folk Alliance, which I just am recovering from right now. I'm still kind of feeling it. Staying up all night with folk singers and songwriters from all over the world in Kansas City last week. It's a really fun time. And I asked Willie Watson, who's an established, you know, badass of folk music. I asked him about it. I know Critter from Old Crow Medicine Show too, and they both have this same story. They're younger than me, right? they were, you know, into Rat and Poison, or Poison and Guns N' Roses, and then Kurt Cobain came along and sang that Lead Belly song on MTV Unplugged. And for them, that is, and I can see now that that's where the real turning point is in American roots music. And looking back, as this modern group of cats came along, they're like, oh, those Lead Belly lyrics are wilder and crazier than any song by Poison.
Yeah.
They started getting into it. And that's, you know, and then Old Brother We're Out There came out, and then the Mumford and Sons formed from listening to that music. So you have this modern roots movement that is very expansive today, and I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah. I mean, you've shared the stage and credits with Lucinda Williams and, you know, Volca, of course, and Mike Campbell and others. I mean, what have you kind of learned from them, or when you're around others like that? That
I should have learned more. I should have learned more about business acumen and stuff like that. But you can't, you know. I learned about songwriting, and that's what, when any young kid comes up to me at Folk Alliance or wherever and wants to have a chat about stuff, I'm always like, I have nothing to tell you about music business. Like, I'm a cautionary tale in that department. I pretty much, like, I almost let it all just crumble completely, you know, in a haze of booze and drugs or whatever. But I'm lucky I established enough of a foundation to continue doing it, and I didn't kill myself in the process. But I'm like more into talking about songs and art and how to write the best song you can. That's my advice for the young ones out there, is just write the best song you can. Or my advice for anybody and any artist in the middle of turmoil, it's just like, do the best work you can. The rest of it really isn't up to you. You know, when it comes down to writing a song, I'm on my own, usually. I do co-write sometimes. I mean, I'm in Nashville after all. You know, I could co-write with my mailman if I wanted to here. You know, it's like, that's the way it is here. Or my plumber, who's a blues man.
Well, let's talk about Find Your Way. I mean, having listened, being familiar with your earlier work, I mean, I was listening to The Truth About Us and Breaking Mother's Heart on just the last few days getting ready for this. And I was struck how each album is so different, but so consistent, and listening to, I mean, just the sound and how you set the sound and the theme behind it. And really listening to the album Find Your Way, I hear that there's like real ethereal quality to it. And Find Your Way, it feels like, again, the song itself, it just has a lot of sonic dissonance and some earthy, melancholy, yet hopeful sound, like the sound Find Your Way, You'll Find Your Way. So what was the inspiration for the song and that you wrote right there?
Well, that word ethereal or ethereal, I'm not actually sure how that word is pronounced. It's come up quite a bit in describing the sound. Now, I don't know what the sound's going to be until I get to the studio and sit down with the band and go. I might have some ideas, but I let go completely because I went to Canada. My mom's Canadian, and I'm really fortunate to have this friend named Leroy Stagger, who's a great artist and songwriter and producer himself, and kind of activist songwriter, huge disciple of Steve Earle, who we both admire. He lives out in Victoria on the island off the coast in BC, and he built a studio. He's just good at that stuff. Like, he built a beautiful studio. He wanted to break the cherry with that new studio called Neighborhood Recorders by making an album with me. So he put together a grant, and I got to go out there and do it. He hired the band. I had no idea really who was going to do it except for one guy. He put a band together, and we just sat in a room and played. And that's what you got. You know, what you got is the Find Your Way album, which is definitely different than any other album I've made. And I thank you for noticing that, you know, the albums, and I'm an album guy, and I like an album to have a cohesive like thing to it. We all do, I guess, older cats who are more into the album vibe than the single vibe. But, and sometimes people are only going to listen to that first song. So this one, I just gave it all. I said, yeah, Leroy, produce it. Everybody get the vibes going. Let's do this. Let's make a vibe out folk album where the bass player, upright bass player, is a couple feet away from me in the studio. So it's all blending in this folk soup, you know? And then I just like, I'll just name the album after that track. It's hard enough to get people to listen to your art or work, right? A lot of people might only ever listen to this first song. That's as far as they're going to get. So I was like, I'm going to name the album after that song. I'm going to put it first, and there it is. And then we'll see what happens after that. And that's what I'm doing. That kind of sets the mood for the album, the yeah. Find Your Way song, which I did write in this spot on that guitar. I have a Patreon page, right? Patreon.com/Tim Easton. And I have to say, if you love an artist and you want to support an artist, you know, Patreon is the way to go, because you basically, on mine, it's $2 a month. And you can pay for it in one lump. Like, you can go $24 and you get a year's worth of stuff. And you get a new song every month, usually a video of me doing it, a demo. And then you get all the recordings I end up making of those songs. So this was a demo I submitted to my Patreon page somewhere in the pandemic. And I wrote it fast, and it is a true story. What happened, it's a little bit of a cautionary tale. It's a little bit dangerous and a little bit scary and a little bit funny. But the funny part is only funny because I didn't hurt anybody or myself. But I did something very foolish in that I was at a recording session with the Band of Heathens from Texas. Mm-hmm. And we were doing the session where they back me up on a song, and then I hang out and do backing vocals on their song. So we did my song, and then it was time for them to do their song. And they had a bag of treats with them, and they had all these Rice Krispie treats, and they were laced with pot, and they were Chris, they told me Chris Robinson gave them. So it was like, and that's the second, you know, so yeah. So Chris Robinson of the Black Crowes, he can handle his drugs, whatever. I'm not, no passing judgment on any of these. I decided, well, I'm done for the day. I'll just have a little nibble of one of these. And I went into a deep, dark panic because I couldn't handle it. It was kind of dangerous. And I panicked and I jumped in my car and I drove away. And I did get home eventually. But on the way home, I kind of woke up at a stoplight and didn't know where I was or where I was going. So it was a pivotal moment in getting me to change my life. Mm. And I haven't done anything like that, you know, since then. It was 8 years ago. I reached out for help, you know, I got help because that was just ridiculous to be going through such a dangerous thing behind the wheel of a car when you have responsibilities in this life. And I was a mess, and it kind of snapped me out of it, actually.
Switch once more, and someone slammed the horn, and I slowly made my way on down the road to pull over. Thank my lucky soul. Everybody else.
The song is beautiful, and I love, I mean, this is what I, as a someone who grew up writing, I was more of a journalist, reporter kind of writer. I couldn't have a hard time writing fiction and writing with imagery and allegory that I can't talk right now, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I just love how the listener right where you are, right from the start. I mean, you know, something's going on here, and don't know well too high to even know. So that's obviously.
Yeah. The lyric is definitely like something like when I played that in front of my daughter, I'm like, she's like, what's going on? And I'm like, yeah, I'll explain it to her. But I get right into it. I just tell the truth. It's a cautionary tale, but it's also me trying to say like, hey, you know what? You try to change your life, but you might backslide a little bit and get into a problem and you can still find your way. You know, you can still figure it out. And that's really what was going on with me that time. I knew that I needed to wrap up the partying life. You know, I was terrible at it. I kept messing up. You know, just super grateful I didn't hurt anybody in the process or really, you know, physically with a car. It's just like, it's kind of scary. It kind of makes me a little bit shaky when I think about it, but I just want to be honest about it. And, you know, it helps me to try to tell my story so that it might help others find their way.
Just to catch my breath, still shaking from another wake-up call from certain death. Fate does not expect you to understand. A wreck inside a wreck can hardly make demands. So pull over, thank your lucky soul. Everybody else already knows you never know how long it takes in between the breaks. Every dream starts with some shaking. I'm not one to ask when it comes to pass. Every day is another chance to find your...
The sound of it, that's all that band. I mean, the overdub is that pedal steel.
And yeah, for me, I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of what happened with the album that I made with Jay Bennett and those guys. Just a ethereal thing happening, like where it's like spacey and floating. And there is absolutely no artificial intelligence on this record. There's no click track. There's no grid. Like it's not a Nashville clean folk album, right? Where everything's just boom, boom, boom. You can take, you know, it's the sound of a band playing together in a room, and not a rock band, but like a folk band. You know, there's like a bunch of acoustic instruments that lay the bed down for then the violin and the pedal steel to take over, which, just it made this sound that I thought, well, that it just jumped right to the top of the pile for me. And I wanted to base my whole record around that sound.
I mean, I've read that you've called your songs like feature films in under 3 minutes or so, and obviously you're right. But how do you? I mean, I know it just probably takes years and years of practice and trial and error. But how do you know when you got it right? I mean, because you got packed in a lot in a pretty short period of time using not a lot of words, but the words that you use are powerful.
Yeah. Well. There's a secret but there's a strategy to leave some things out as well, because we're dealing with songs here. We're not dealing with short stories or novels or feature length films. You don't need every detail in the song to leave some for the imagination.
Yeah. I love the bridge. I love the lyrics there too. Cause it's kind of when it, I think you say you're the character kind of like realizes you can still change your life and no one, you know, we're not that different from each other. And
yeah, the lyrics right there is that nobody ever wants to admit or nobody ever wants to confess. Mm-hmm. And I swapped confess and admit when I sang it live that moment. I was like, oh, I wanted those to, but I was like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's one of those cases where you can either put your foot down and say, nope, we got to do it again or, you know, sing it again or whatever. And, but either one works. And I've already flopped them live. Nobody ever wants to confess that they're just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. Really, the lyric was, nobody ever wants to admit that they're just like everybody else. Nobody ever wants to confess that what they really wanted nearly killed them, and it may still do it yet.
Nobody ever wants
I love it. I think it's a brilliant song, and thank you for your time tonight or this afternoon. And so you already talked about where we can find you online, and you'll be on the road. So hopefully,
yeah, man, timeaston.com is how to find me. I'm also on all the social things. I'm really easy to get a hold of.
Okay.
And I appreciate you chatting about the song, and I appreciate everybody out there that listens to it and thinks about it and then shares it with a friend. That's really nice of you. I'm happy that it's spreading around the world, so I really appreciate it.
Well, the honor was all mine, Tim. Thank you again for joining me. Thank you for listening. TimEaston.com. What did I tell you? You know, it's not every day you get to talk about the Clash and the Louvin Brothers and the Pogues, and yeah, my kind of guy. Anyway, stay tuned, subscribe, and I'll be talking to you soon.